What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Dr. Arman Fati. Arman is a doctor of chiropractic and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. He can be reached on his Instagram at @TheArmanHammer, which is @TheArmanHammer. Let's get started. And here we go. We're live. Awesome. Well, welcome, Dr. Arman. Thank you for coming to the show.
It's really
excited to have you on here, man. We've known each other for a few years now and met at National University of Health Sciences.
You were a naturopathic student. I was a doctor of chiropractic student. We were two kids running around with chickens, like chickens with our heads cut off, trying to figure life out.
Right.
And yeah, man, we just kicked it off pretty early.
And here we are now in your spot in LA celebrating. You just graduated.
Got my piano here, got my dogs, got Staples Center right outside the window.
Yeah.
But I got my Michael Jordan, Derrick Rose posters up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Tony Kukoc, you know what I'm saying?
Representing,
sixth man of the century.
Wow.
Thank you very much. Croatian sensation.
Uh-huh.
D. Rose, till his knee blew out.
Damn.
You know, I was working for the Bulls, actually, for a while.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Stats, right?
So I was doing, my undergrad, I did sport management. I got a bachelor's in business administration, and I had a sports internship with the Chicago Bulls.
Whoa.
So I was working in their facility for 2 years, man. I got to work like behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
doing stats. We were sitting in their practice facility every game. Me and my buddies, we still have a group chat like to this day, like
That's almost cool.
A decade later, like all the guys in that chat, all the guys in, who were like part of that internship and like some other guys who were doing different stuff. One guy's a pastor now. Mm-hmm. It was like another dude's like a insurance sales. I don't know, like guys all over the place. One guy works for Wilson. He's a Wilson sporting goods executive.
Wow.
It's my boy. We just joke all the time.
Love that. That's cool, man.
And
Chi-town, baby.
It's like sitting in a bar without alcohol, like watching these games with just passionate fans. And
right.
It's kind of a crazy sense to like sit where like Michael Jordan sat and watched film.
Right. Wow.
And just like kind of like be breaking it down and being like, dude, we're in the room. We're like in history in the Berto Center in Deerfield, Illinois. Then they moved to a new facility next to the United Center. So I got to see both facilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of dope. I do backtrack though. I did work for the Bulls. I'm sitting here with my Bulls posters.
Love
downtown
it.
LA, celebrating becoming a doctor of chiropractic with you, Adrian, who's now a naturopathic doctor.
Yep. I just graduated in August. You just graduated literally yesterday.
So, son,
I love it. We just, you know, I said, hey, I'm coming up to record a podcast episode, and here we are. So yeah, man, really excited about this. You also just got your black belt in jiu-jitsu, which
Brazilian
is huge.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Brazilian jiu-jitsu to be exact. And
straight out of Brazil, bro. Straight out of Rio.
Huge, man.
That's, we are in LA. I'm saying straight out of Rio.
Man, that's exciting. And I know that's a big passion of yours. We'll talk all about that.
Yeah, that's a big deal. That's a bigger deal, arguably, than chiropractic school, many would argue.
Mm.
Emotionally, I feel like maybe more of a weight off my chest, coming from a Middle Eastern background, having a lot of
mm-hmm.
pressures on me. You know, we're going to talk a lot about the family pressures. We were kind of making a little list, a little bullet point rundown of where we were going to talk about right before here, and talk a little bit about that in terms of just like the expectations. And so they're both hard. They're both accomplishments at 2020, right? 2020. Look at this year.
One of the craziest years of our life.
Got a house, got two dogs. My piano's, you know, going, you know what I'm saying? I made some good friends with people during quarantine.
Uh-huh.
Became a Gracie University certified instructor for jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
Got my black belt in jiu-jitsu. Became a doctor of chiropractic. This year sucked, man. This year was dog shit. Look at the perspective. Perspective is everything. I want to post that meme one day of that little kid who's like third place, like raising his hands. Yeah. And the kid is first place, like,
Yeah.
Like crying, wah, like, you seen that meme?
Exactly, dude. It's just like the billionaire in Malaysia that was worth $15 billion, lost half his fortune, was worth $8 billion, committed suicide.
What?
Because he felt broke.
What kind of debt do you have to be down if you're up that much?
I mean,
what is your lifestyle?
Yeah.
Like, that's like Mike Tyson type stuff. Like, you got to, you know what, we're just going to get a bunch of tigers in the backyard and, like, gold medal freaking toilets, like Saddam Hussein type of shit. Like,
oh, yeah. 100, more than that, even. Who knows? But, yeah, that just shows, man, perspective.
I only say Saddam, and I just hear a rumor because I actually did visit Iran next door, and we did see the Shah's palace, and they had really high-end, really crazy, like, gold in... played it. I mean, like all the everything, all the linings were in gold. Like gold was used kind of like concrete here, like just as a tool to build like this extravagant monumental type of thing. And then they had mentioned like Saddam Hussein's palace, like in the tour. So I'm not just saying that like random name,
right? Right.
Just dropping the name Saddam's like, where's you? Oh, you got controversial. Drop Saddam's name. All we're right,
the first
we're
couple minutes they're already getting controversial. We
got controversial Middle East. We're talking cultural warfare, man. It's crazy.
But anyways, wow, we just went, we dove in head first, man. That's how we do it. Anyway, stepping back a little bit, just start with a little, you know, journey of how you got to this point today, you know, where you've, you know, the things you've gone through, your different education experiences, and kind of how you got to this point in your higher education right now.
Man, where do I start? I think the biggest thing to start about is like talking about having a plan out of high school and not doing what's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about sort of the path that I went on, but man, kind of the path that I looked at then and how it just got put off. And who knew how life would turn out? Who knew?
Yeah.
But at 17, 18 years old, I'm thinking about like, okay, I'm applying to UC Santa Barbara. I'm living in Chicago. Chicago suburbs, like suburbia, like nothing spectacular.
Uh-huh.
Like, safe area, but nothing crazy. And applying to these schools, and then applied to like a couple safety schools. Seemed to be getting my safety school. I got in like 1st of November, like it was super quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be like 20 minutes from downtown Chicago, where my brother was living at the time. He had another bedroom, and I could live with him. And I'm like thinking, okay, that would be dope to live in downtown Chicago, and then I could like catch a quick train and like go to all my classes, but like live in a nice part of town.
Mm-hmm.
Took that convenience. Nice. I'm like, I'm going to go to Loyola. Loyola, Chicago. That was one of the places I got accepted. And went there. A Jesuit education.
Mm-hmm.
And I still look at it as like a lot of what I learned were not marketable skills.
Mm.
It's just racking up, you know, a bill essentially that's got to be paid, a debt to take classes, to take credits. For what?
Right.
You know? A degree, sure. A degree in humanity studies, great. You know, that's some interesting stuff. It's mm-hmm. like a personal endeavor. Like, I could see myself being like 50 and wanted to get like a degree in personal study in like, I don't know, human studies or human geography.
Mm-hmm.
If like as a matter of interest, like I want to get a really high level understanding of something, and I have the time, I'm establishing my career, and I'd like to just fulfill a passion, go back to school, do something. Like that's where I see like school being valuable as like a humanity experience, like a liberal arts experience being uh-huh. really valuable versus building marketable skills, which is something where I think kids in high school don't even like understand that.
Right.
I think so, kids in college don't understand that. I think kids coming out of college don't even understand that.
Mm-mm.
And when I was in college, I happened to be making good money playing piano.
Really?
I was playing piano bars. I had played all my life.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I got my piano right here. I did a lot of gigs and
man, you play like making, the dueling piano bars?
Dueling piano bars, 50 to 80 bucks an hour type of thing.
Wow, that's incredible.
Dude, this is great. You can make like several hundred bucks in a night.
Dang.
Made 1,200 in a night once. That was like insane.
And you're how old?
I was from 21 to like 24.
23. I love it.
Three.
Hustling.
Yeah, and I was actually playing it like I was doing this at like 19, 20 years old. I was going to like the Hyatt Regency across the street, dressed myself in a suit. I went to the Ritz-Carlton, I did this.
Uh-huh.
I went to the Renaissance, I did this, like these different hotels in the areas, and I put on a suit. Nicest suit that I had for someone's wedding, whatever. And go out there, put a jar out, put like a few bucks in there to make it look like, you know, usually have a $2 bill in there. Just like you can find a $2 bill somewhere. Put a $2 bill in there. It's like that's a nice classy thing to have like in a nice jar, and then people want a tip.
Yeah.
Made a lot of money that way, dude.
Wow.
That's hustling. And then I did get like kicked out of a couple places. Just like after a while, they're like, okay, you're good. But we didn't plan on having a piano here and something. But I would always like fidangle my way in.
I love
somehow.
It.
Somehow. And like some places like just kind of let me go. And then I'm like, it's better to have gigs. It's better to have like planned gigs instead of just like showing up to see that I didn't have a job. And well, I had a job for 1 year in college. I was working with the Chicago Board of Trade, but that was didn't really like I was just a runner and I was getting like T's and shit. It was ruthless.
You got to pay your dues in that world of the trading, right?
Yeah. You know, I was working as a tennis instructor too. And those paid like, that was paying like at the time, 15, 20 bucks an hour to teach tennis classes, which is pretty cool. I played tennis like all my life. So up to that point, it's feet and balls and, you know, get a little sweat. It's great.
I love tennis.
Yeah. Great to make a few bucks. But man, hustling piano. Hustling piano, bro. From 19 to like 23,
24.
Making good, you know, for a college student, like you just like, I'm basically like saving this. You know, saving some, but like spending a lot of just like going out. Like all my going out money was kind of made that way.
Yeah, exactly. So you went to Loyola, then what?
Loyola, and then I was 170 pounds going into Loyola. I was 250 pounds coming out because I was hanging out. I was drinking all the time, dude.
Wow.
I was drinking. I was like hanging around. I was getting free food at these piano things.
Yeah.
And it was, they hook you up. They hook you up with like these things. And I didn't have a healthy lifestyle. I wasn't playing tennis anymore. I wasn't like I just wasn't exercising much. So I'm like graduated college, spent 5 years in college because I studied abroad and I got nothing done abroad in terms of my requirements.
Where'd you study abroad?
In Rome for a semester, because like Loyola had a, so it's the same, like you could just like go take classes there for a semester because they have a campus there. So it's like you pay the same fee or whatever and go over there. So why not? Like that was fun. That's a whole, I could just do a whole like podcast on just like Rome experience, but
I bet
that's another story for another day. So I was really out of shape, So I started jiu-jitsu. Right?
Like when was this? What year?
This was 2012.
Wow.
And I had a Brazilian jiu-jitsu place across the street from me. Long story short, I lost 70 pounds in a year. I was working out. I was training all the time. I was still taking some courses at UIC. Still hustling piano. Taking some courses at UIC to get into dental school. That was sort of the thought. Like I had a friend. She was in dental school. She just got into dental school. She's like, okay, I got the path for you. This is like what you need to do. And you know, familial pressures being from a Persian family where I have a brother, sister who are MDs. My dad's an MD. What are you gonna do? You're gonna go to that? Either gonna hit it big on your piano and sell that album you've been talking about. And I didn't have no album, but it's like either make it big or no. I was in the band for a while, and like the band wanted to bring me out full time.
Wow.
And they were like doing small time tours, like hitting up bars across the country.
Okay.
Not crazy, like, but bars, you know, that they got gigs.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to join them full time, and they were gaining some traction. They like wanted me to help them write music and stuff. And I helped them with like a CD release show. I just learned all their songs, but I didn't join the band. So that was kind of a shame that, you know, I kind of look back, I was like, what would life be if I was on the road with those guys and really had a whole band behind like creating music? But okay, can't look back too much, but just experiences like what ifs.
Right. That's a good one.
I could talk about the Bulls and the opportunity to work for them, but going a different way. So spent a year at UIC taking some part-time courses, hustling, you know what I'm saying, training jiu-jitsu, getting my life together a bit. Then I got into this master's program, a prestigious master's program at Rush. It was like a one-year biotechnology master's. This basically sets you up to do anything you want in science. Like you get a master's in biotech from this university, is like you're in a good position to sort of move forward. And I'll say this about Rush. They provided us a really cool education in 1 year in terms of like we got to dissect animals. Yeah, that was cool to actually dissect animals and like implant like feeding tubes in them and doing medical school pharmacology in there, which was a brutal class, but it was like one that kind of shaped you up. It's like, okay, get ready for this. But they really made sure everybody passed. Isn't that crazy? They wanted to meet a quota of people getting into schools. It's kind of a dirty thing, right? Like they wanted people to get that 3.5, that 3.2, just tried to get A's and B's. Yeah, great. They encouraged B's. We're like, yeah, try to get A's. And they like nudge, give retakes and stuff. And I did get a good GPA. It did come with like some help. Uh-huh. Like in there, like I was, I mean, I had to study a lot, man, but
sure.
I start to see like a lot of these teachers, maybe it's the way the universe is sometimes that like they want you to succeed. Uh-huh. They don't want to look bad, but that right. was a challenging time, just a stressful time. A 1-year master's program, brutal. And I'm training jiu-jitsu every day. Keep this in mind. Every day, I'm still training jiu-jitsu.
Wow.
I remember being in the lab, and we had 8 to 12 lab every day. Just had to run these experiments. Uh-huh. And from like 8 to 11, I would get my work done, and then whenever you're done. You could like leave. And 11:30, I had downtown Chicago training. Uh-huh. So I would bolt, and by the time like warm-ups are starting, I get 11:30 to 12:30 class. I hit that jiu-jitsu class, and then like bounced right after. I live like 2 blocks away from jiu-jitsu. Shower, get back, and like I'm there like 5 minutes late. No big deal. Rolling to class, sit in the back, wow. chilling. It's all good.
That's
awesome. And I stole a class, and I've looked at my entire education that way, as like balancing jiu-jitsu and whatever I'm doing.
Wow.
And that's why it's like, dude, I got a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt and a chiropractic doctorate within 3 months of each other. Those were both like long-term goals,
right?
Many years. Yeah. Eight years in a month in jiu-jitsu, and like just chiropractic school was 4 years in a month.
Yeah, wow.
The master's was a year. UIC was a year. After the master's, I just worked for a year. I was working as a TA. I uh-huh. was hustling a little piano. I was doing a lot of jiu-jitsu.
Uh-huh.
I was at a point I could like ref tournaments now in jiu-jitsu, so wow. I was saving some, you know, cash that way.
Nice.
But you know, yeah, this year I was just more focused on working a year after my master's.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided at the end of that year I'm gonna go to chiropractic school.
Uh-huh.
I've got a master's in biotech. Like that's like a shoo-in. And like I applied and I got in like in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
Like it's quick, like master's in biotech. I'm like, okay, like I can go to Southern California, I can train with the best jiu-jitsu guys in the world, and I can learn something I love to do. Like I'm so enamored by like getting adjusted, cracked. I had seen a chiropractor for a while because of my neck in jiu-jitsu, like started as a blue belt. And this guy was like, he was a black belt in jiu-jitsu and he was a chiropractor, and Dr. Pete Goldman in San Francisco, user of the Zone Technique, Zone School founder. So I can talk a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole topic.
We'll get into. That's a whole topic.
Yeah.
But dude, I mean, I was in chiropractic school. I'm going to go to chiropractic school. This is like 2015. Thinking, okay, this is what I'm going to do. It's January, February. Keep in mind, I had applied to a bunch of like dental schools.
Okay.
And I got interviews from 3.
Okay.
And I like went out to Florida, did an interview. New York did an interview. And like Indiana University.
Yeah.
And those are nerve-wracking. And I didn't hear anything December 1st, the first day that they give answers.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, freaking out. Okay, January came. It's like, oh, man, freaking out. Like, it's a strategy. Like, you got to tell this guy you're their first choice or this guy, but then they have their own power rankings. You know what I'm saying?
That's crazy. Yeah,
talk,
I get it.
Man, I could just talk about taking the DAT, how much, like, stress that was. Like, the depressive cycle that went along with, like, studying for these exams and having to do good enough to have a competitive DAT score, which I did.
Right.
Because at the end of that summer, like 2 weeks before dental school started, like end of the cycle, we're talking like mid-June 2015, I got accepted to dental school.
Uh-huh.
I was so certain. I was already looking for places to live for chiropractic.
Hmm.
I was so excited.
And then, here in LA?
No, I'm in Chicago at this
point. Oh, okay.
I'm so excited to go to chiropractic school in LA.
Uh-huh.
I got to all 3 chiropractic schools I applied to. Palmer, San Jose, National in Chicago, and SCU in La Habra, or in Whittier, California, about 30 minutes from LA.
Uh-huh.
Right, so, yeah, it's about as far from National, because National's in Lombard, Illinois. It's about 30 minutes from downtown Chicago.
Yeah.
We're about the same.
Okay.
About the same.
Okay.
It's a little suburb of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So, we're in, right now, you and I are sitting in downtown LA among the buildings, among
right
the clouds, bro, but the school is about 30 minutes east, southeast of here in a very hilly area. Pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
Anyways.
Nice.
Got accepted to dental school last second.
Then you know, what?
Family was ecstatic. Mm-hmm. It was a sure thing at this point. The family's like, this is what you're doing. Good job. Yay. We plan to go. And I'm like, great. Mm-hmm. Through my teeth, I'm like kind of gritting. You know, I knew, you know, dentists do, they do well for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They do well for themselves. So, you know, that's the reason you're doing it. This is a good, career. This will put food on the table. It's stable. You know, you're going to come out of there and there's going to be jobs waiting for you. Like dentistry, for sure, they're pretty set.
Right.
Like there ain't no starving dentists. I don't care.
Yeah.
There's starving lawyers. There's starving actors. There ain't no starving dentists.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah. So, dude, yeah, these guys have jobs waiting for, like, you could get the worst job in dentistry. You're getting paid $150,000, $200,000 out the door.
Wow.
And it's like, dude, you're short selling yourself at that point.
Almost. Yeah. And that's just as an employee, if you start up your own practice, whatever, yeah, it's just like,
phew. Entrepreneur. But, yeah, you know, still 150 to 200, yeah, like,
huge, yeah,
base. And I'm saying, like, that was the best you could get, right? Because I know guys getting way more than that, like, mm-hmm, out the gate.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So,
so you got in, and then what?
So I got in, and I look at it like I made a lot of friends. I was making myself miserable training jiu-jitsu every day and going to school. And I'm talking, mm-hmm, physically. Mm-hmm. I'm talking working in, I mean, at this point, like, I was getting some minor health problems from training jiu-jitsu. I won't say health problem, but I'm like physical health problems. Like my back started to hurt, my neck started to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Cauliflower ear burst was like, mm-hmm, bursting. Mm-hmm. And like, imagine like trying to like be cool with girls in like your first semester at dental school. And like, you're the dude who walks in the big ass cauliflower ear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then people are just like, gnarly, dude. You got like big ass thing. Just like, that's whatever. Cool, like, yeah, I'm that dude. Like, yeah, you know, totally like a 4-stripe blue belt, which is like a step away from purple belt, and purple belt's like halfway to black belt.
Yeah.
And it's like, what does that sound like, dude? Just, like, for someone who doesn't understand how hard Brazilian jiu-jitsu is, like,
right,
girl doesn't hear black belt, they're like, huh.
Right.
You're wasting my time.
But little do they know.
Little do they know. It's like, dude, you're like a 4-stripe blue belt. You're a bad dude. Like,
yeah,
you put some time in to get that far. Like, mm-hmm, you could just mess up anybody in the general population.
Mm-hmm.
Being like little less than halfway to, you know, black belt, which is kind of crazy.
That is crazy.
Anyways, yeah, I'm you know, starting to get like a lot of nerve pain, especially second semester. The first semester went by without incident. You know, everything was passed. Everything was good. Second semester came, and man, I was missing class because I was having like nerve pain in my neck, like, really? Couldn't turn my neck because we were working in the labs a lot, so we were bending down, having to, you know, look around the corners of these teeth,
mm-hmm,
right? And you know, at this point, the ergonomics of what I was doing wasn't like the best,
right?
And you know, there's these things, they wear these dental loops, and I got some dental loops, which are like these the glasses, the bifocal glasses of like with the microscopes, mm-hmm, that they can like look in and magnify like the right, teeth that a lot of dentists use. And I got one of those, and still, like, it was still awkward for me. Like, I had to like still turn my neck and stuff, and it just, especially now, here's the thing, going to jiu-jitsu every day, not warming up, just jumping into class and like training,
mm-hmm,
just hard, boom, 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 beat myself up, come home, study a little bit, and I was hanging on by a thread. I remember a brutal sequence, man, where it was like 2 weeks of straight exam every single day in like mid-February.
Wow.
And then on that weekend between them, I moved apartments.
Wow.
So I was moving. So, dude, like, imagine that kind of pressure on you and that like thing. It's like, dude, we got an exam every day. You've kind of felt this in like national, like we've had like maybe 4 days in a row,
right, where
it was like an exam, or five days,
yeah,
in a row,
but
10 days in a row, I'm talking about like some assessment. A couple of them weren't crazy, but it's still a grade where it's like, okay, we still got to study for this.
Wow.
So I remember I was like in really like borderline for a few of them going into finals because like the moving and everything and the stress, it just, and I was going through like a depressive, you know, episode, very depressive, like very like, just not liking this work and just trying to pass these courses and,
you know, passionate, dealing, you might say,
passionate, yeah, like physical pain. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about just getting a practice, right? Just graduate, get a practice going, hire people and chill. Uh-huh. Like that's what I'm thinking. That's just like where my mind's at for dental school. Like, are you trying to like learn this stuff, and are you passionate about actually helping patients and saving that tooth and making sure that, you know, the person has a high quality of life and isn't dealing with pain and doing the ethical cycle and, you know, trying to find the best drills and stuff and getting really into the burrs and, you know, what are the different patterns you can carve with the different heads of the burrs.
Huh.
And then like what kind of corners, how is the mouth shaped that we have to corner around this and this and that. And it's better if we just have like a different funneled, different angled cone or something. You get, so I could see how there's a lot of passion in dentistry. Like there's people who could like get real geometric with it.
Uh-huh.
On the DAT, the dental admission test, which is the test to get into dental school.
Uh-huh.
One of the sections was the perceptual ability test. Wow. I remember I got a 24 on this section, which is a very relatively high score.
Uh-huh.
And that's because I just did a bunch of practice tests. Like like I got this computer program that it came with like 100 preloaded practice exams, and like I was ripping through it. And like I just wake up every morning and take the laptop from under my bed, boop, click it open, do one test.
Wow.
For like 3 months. Then I was like hitting 23, 23, 24, 23, 23, 24, 23, 23, 24. I was like, I'm going to be fine.
Uh-huh.
But like started with like 16, 17, 19, 17, 18, 18, 18, 19, 16, 17, 18, 20, 21, 21, 20, 21, 21, 23, 23, 23, 23,
20. What's a good score? Like what is it out of?
Well, basically anything 20 or above is like competitive for dental school. So 24 was like 90 something percent.
Wow.
So, and
badass.
Basically. Yeah, that score. Yeah. On top of like a par science score.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, reading score, and they also had like a math score. Like it was kind of par, a little above average, but like, you know, GPA was like average, uh-huh. right? But I had a master's, so that's competitive.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, just enough to get into dental school,
uh-huh.
right? So I had an incident in dental school. This is like March of 2016.
Okay.
Again, I'm very stressed out from all of, you know, the things going on, physical pain. We had to do these dentures. We were making a set of dentures. And, you know, there's like a original way to do it where it's like you do it from, you know, building up wax and like putting all the teeth in and like having to line it up perfectly. And then there's like a whole process about going it. Very painstaking. So I spent about 7 to 8 hours on one little corner, and like in that was like that wasn't like the craziest amount of time. I'm just saying this is like over 3 days that I'm really spending some time on this shit.
Okay.
And then I took it to a professor and they just like completely tore it apart. They're like, yeah, that's not gonna fly. Like you gotta like redo it. You messed up. You read this wrong, you read this backwards and some. And then like I just went down and like I put my thing down and I threw a tool, one of the tools I had in my hand, to the on my table.
Okay.
And like
just out of like frustration.
Just out of frustration.
Yeah.
And like a couple people like kind of looked over, like no teachers around, but just like a couple students, they kind of peeked. They're like, everything cool? I'm like, yeah, sorry, I was just frustrated. And they're like, okay, cool. And then that got to the teacher, you know, and then that got to the dean, and then they said like, yeah, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if somebody, like, it's more for the safety. I just want to make sure, like, you didn't throw it at anyone or nothing. Like, that's what the safety issue was. Like, some people reported that it's a tool was thrown or something. And I'm like, yeah, that was out of frustration. Okay, so you weren't, like, throwing it at him. No, I wasn't throwing it at anyone.
Right.
No, so they're like, okay, well, yeah, just try, you know, this is kind of like a warning.
Uh-huh.
Try to relax.
Okay.
Then I had another incident happen that this sort of did it. Was another situation like that where I had spent a lot of time. This time it was like doing fillings.
Okay.
Fillings, like we drill in. This is like in March, April, a couple weeks later. And it was another situation. I just took it. Dude, I just took it to one of the TAs and she just crapped on it. She took a shit on it. Uh-huh. Like really just verbally assaulted me in terms of how bad it was. This will get you sued. Like this is like, she was like a fourth year student.
Mm.
Like kiss my ass. Like seriously, just give me some feedback. Like stop brutalizing me.
Right.
And then there were these little plastic models.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I walked away and I just like, they were kind of made of this gummy sort of material that kind of connected the teeth. Anyways, sure. And I just kind of like ripped it in half, like
okay.
out of frustration.
Okay.
So it was a little, you could talk about anger management. I didn't have it like, I didn't have like, I don't know if this is the right profession.
Right.
I think this is what, here's.
And that was coming out in those episodes like that, right?
Right. So I took this to the teacher. I just said, I need a new thing. They're like, what the hell? Those are like $150 something. I'm like, yeah, I'll pay it. Like just, yeah. I don't know. What am I supposed to say? Like, I'll pay for it. I'll just go to the student store. You can buy another one.
Right.
I'm like, okay, but I mean, Armand, like. Yeah, so that like chill, like so they talk to the dean again. Assistant, she was actually the assistant dean. She's just like, listen. She sat me down. She's like, you don't need to do this. Like, mm-hmm. if you really, I mean, do you like being here? Like, is this what you want to do? Like because this is sort of, you know, a lot of times I'll talk to students and think about like, you know, they want to withdraw or something because it has to do with academics. Or it has to do with behavioral issues with you. I'm wondering, do you actually want to be here?
Mm.
That's the question I'm asking. And I told her like, oh, I was in chiropractic school. I, you know, I had these options lined up in front of me, and last second I got in. And she said that she gave me like a story about her daughter, how she was in medical school for 2 years. She dropped out and like went, became a nurse, got married, has kids, is so happy now.
Wow.
And like has a good schedule, works 2 days a week, and
uh-huh.
just enjoys her life.
Yeah.
And she said it didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter that she, but you could see the disappointment in her eyes as, like, one of those types of people who wanted all their kids to become doctors.
Mm.
And she was speaking to me like a mother, as she told me, sweet Kentucky woman. Sweet Kentucky woman. She knows who she is. I'm not going to put her on blast, but.
Yeah.
She was very sweet. Ultimately, the writing was on the wall. What happened at the end of the term was anytime you, like, fail anything, they let you remediate it.
Uh-huh.
Right, so I failed one course out of like 12. That it was the removable prosthodontics class. So it was the making the dentures class. Like it just uh-huh. dentures just screwed me. I mean, dude, I just like
fucking dentures.
I barely passed the dentures. Like everybody got like 100%, 90%, whatever on like the denture. I handed in, got a 70. I'm like, okay, and just walk away from that hands clean. like that did not help my grade because I was like most of our grade.
Oh,
that boy. Was most of our grade was those dentures, and that was like 70% of your grade. So it's like you go into the final, which is like 30%, and I'm at 70%. I better pass that final,
right,
dude? I better pass that freaking final, and didn't quite pass it. And then I was in like the remediation thing, so like he called me into the office like for remediation, but then it was like basically like, listen, like you know we're looking at your thing, like probationary thing. It's like. And they're very conservative university, so like you know, we can let this thing drag out. Like people will traditionally be recommended for dismissal at this point. So that was a whole thing. That was about a week and a half, 2 week process. Parents got involved, like talking with everyone, and then like I'm super depressed, and I just still working in the student clinic. Summer ended up like moving past. I just had to, you know, I was in remediation territory for one class, but like I was still doing the summer internship in the school, so it was like they were treating me like a second year.
Uh-huh.
Still like moving on to second year or whatever. But all these like mechanisms were in place, and before things got ugly, my parents and I, like they weren't gonna say anything. Like, here's the thing. After one meeting, I just told my dad, could we just like call one of the Cairo schools and see if they're, you know, still available? And I called National University in Chicago. It had been less than a year since I got accepted by them, so they still had my acceptance on file. So I didn't need to file any paperwork. I could just like say yes and start the next term.
Right.
So it was kind of like that. So I was like, okay. I had like a get out of jail free card in a sense.
There you go.
I still kind of move towards this legacy of doctorship without. You know, I have to think about like not hanging myself, bro. Like this shit was bad. Like I hated dental school. I hated this stuff. I hated my life. I hated the pressure. I hated like the insecure feelings of being around classmates and looking at someone who's doing well for themselves and just feeling really insecure about yourself. You know what I mean? And like thinking you should be doing more and seeing how people take notes. I wish I took notes like that. Oh geez, I mean, you know, what do I say to that person to try to get their notes? Oh man. But then you're using people, and then you know, then you're labeled as a failure and then someone who doesn't try. And
yeah,
then you
man.
Just, you, it's a cycle of like, you have to find a way to learn that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
That I learned this in chiropractic school later. Like, I realized I'm not a classical sit home and read notes off a slide person and just bury my head in a computer.
Right.
I figured out a way to study for myself that I passed everything in chiropractic school. Like, I, to the credit, like, dental school was sort of a stepping stone for me to understand, dude, like, you know, you can't go and, like, train jiu-jitsu every day and then go to your buddy's house and play Halo for 3 hours and then study.
Right.
Like, you have
right.
to, you have to balance things. Less Halo.
Right.
Less Halo. But, but, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Really, so then you got into chiropractic school at National.
Yeah. Got to chiropractic
school. And then National. You left.
I left dental school. So I withdrew from Indiana University.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a amicable withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't anything, you know what I mean? Like, I technically withdrawed without my second semester grades being put in.
Okay.
So, like, this was sort of like a more coming from the stance of, like, I don't need to be there rather than, like, you're not welcome here.
Uh-huh.
But it was sort of like they were kind of moving me out. I felt like they were
nudging
versus like letting this kind of like, let's go to the council and this and that.
Okay.
And then I was able to transfer head and neck anatomy, went to chiropractic school.
So
still had to take head and neck anatomy, but like,
yeah,
the knowledge transferred. I didn't have to study for that class at all.
Yeah.
So I was just reviewing stuff. I was like, oh, I've seen all this stuff.
Maxillary nerve, got it.
Yeah. So chiropractic school, fortunately, you get brutalized for a year at dental school. The first year of chiropractic school was manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I came in, they had like a microbiology course, which is a joke. They had they had like a body systems class. Like, we did like a anatomy class. I mean, head and neck anatomy was a complete joke. Like, I did not even study for that class until the final, like, just to review stuff, and just, you know, did fine. And then
anatomy was tough for me though, because I came from a non-science background, so yeah. For me, coming from finance, from sales, and then going into you know, cadaver lab, I was just like, holy shit, this is insane.
Cadaver lab, okay, we could talk all about cadaver lab. See, that's a grind in itself physically, because you're breathing formaldehyde.
Yeah,
you're distracted. You got the clothes you wear are going to be like socially unacceptable.
You better
go home, throw that shit in the hamper.
Yeah.
Shower, and then like go wherever you're gonna go.
Right.
Don't go training after anatomy lab.
Ooh.
I did that a couple times, just out of like inconvenience of time and poor choice.
Everybody knew.
Some crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff.
So
it's kid stuff, man. You just learn it.
Exactly. How did you get into jiu-jitsu? Like, tell me your whole story and background with that, like, from the beginning.
So let's rewind. I just graduated undergrad, and I was like 2 months out of undergrad. I was very overweight.
Okay.
I lived two blocks from a jiu-jitsu school.
Mm.
Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, I talked about this like another podcast. The gist of it is I needed to lose weight, and it seemed like really gnarly, and I didn't know anything about jiu-jitsu, and I go in and I get these vibes that it's like a bigger deal than I'm making it. Like, it's a brotherhood. This is like a community. This is a real martial art, man. This is something that it really teaches you how to street fight.
Mm.
How to street fight, dude. How to like protect yourself. Like, this isn't like a little karate class where we're standing in line doing punches.
Well, exactly. Because I was going to say, my background in martial arts is taekwondo. Yeah. And you do your
have a guy
form.
Punching the air in front of him. Just
right.
Punching the air. We're not doing it on people. We're not grabbing each other. We're not understanding how the human body works.
Right.
Action, reaction. We're not doing that. Even judo is a good thing to take up.
Yeah.
Judo is a little more brutal on the body, but
they're
sister arts. But karate, I mean.
Karate, taekwondo, which I did. We did some sparring, which was cool. But
sparring school.
The forms, which we were doing just like, and it was just like, it felt so. And then I realized it's like a deeper thing where it's like meditation. It gets into some deep.
Discipline.
Exactly, the discipline and stuff. But as a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old and stuff, you're not thinking about that. You're just like, what the hell is this going to do for me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the parents are trying to cater to the community. It's like, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's like, oh, they got their son into karate.
Right.
Oh, little Johnny's a black belt, did you know? He's a Tang Sudo champion. Like, oh, and then the parents are like sitting at the dinner tables, like, you know, Mrs. Jones's son is doing karate.
Yeah.
And then they're like, And then didn't you just make partner? Can't we do karate lessons?
Mm-hmm. No, it really, it kind of was like that. And certain gyms were more like that than others, you know, certain, whatever they're called, dojos, right?
McDojos, that's what they call them.
McDojo.
McDojos are the ones that are just for-profit things. You got to look at the head instructor. Are they in shape? Do they train? Do they look like they're about what they do?
Right.
You don't want some, like, person lead from who just the front, got,
like, by example,
checked out, who got a black belt and checked out.
Right.
And, like, doesn't live that lifestyle, isn't a martial artist, like, get the hell out of there.
Because even if they teach the class, it's still not going to matter. They're not into it themselves.
No, are they onto like a what they call Kaizen in the Japanese language, about the progressive pursuit of self-development.
Yeah.
It's like everything
continuous doing, improvement.
Yeah, everything that you're doing is like whatever is a discipline towards self-improvement. Like everything that you're every action you take, everything you, when you wake up in the morning to the moment that you go to sleep, it's like we're working towards this goal. And this is like the Kaizen principle.
Yeah.
And it's like these Japanese will have one word that represents sort of an entire like
philosophy. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. I mean, what's your, what's the parallel that you draw? And just like you said, it all happened in like a short amount of time close to each other, but like getting your black belt in jiu-jitsu with becoming a doctor, you know, a chiropractor, what, how, you know, what parallels do you see in that? It's kind of interesting.
The parallel, well, let me start by saying this. Like, I got to purple belt in jiu-jitsu, which is the mid-level belt, right after dental school. Like, the day I returned, I was training all the time.
Wow.
My instructor in Chicago, Idris Redzovic, he saw you're ready. Boom. He gave it to me. I'm like, damn. This is where I started to get more gigs from jiu-jitsu. Then spent a year and a half in Chicago going to chiropractic school, and then I'm looking at Instagram every day like, man, California is the place to be. For jiu-jitsu. Just so happens that SCU, California, Southern California University, and National University, our Cairo school in Chicago, had very similar curriculums.
Nice.
I'm like, I got to transfer. I have to do this.
Nice.
Made it happen. Made it happen like spring of 2018. Got out here. Spent 2.5 years, put off graduation 8 months, but I graduated yesterday. And I got my Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt 3 months ago. So I came out here and I've been training Jiu-Jitsu every day, usually multiple times a day, while keeping my grades up.
That's huge, man.
Yeah, living with roommates. For the most part, I was living with 4 roommates. So living real, like, you know, I was like cleaning up, you know, at the student store. I was like, you know, doing like janitorial work.
Wow.
Teaching private lessons. I'm teaching a lot more private lessons these days.
All right. I love that.
You know, getting my, you know, everything going. It's going to be exciting. So the parallels. So anyways, we take this whole path to California and I just spend it just in a vortex of jiu-jitsu and chiropractic, jiu-jitsu and chiropractic. Parallels kind of started from anatomy class where I started to really be, you know, discover as a purple belt at National how the human body worked, muscle actions. When you talk about a muscle group in a body, if you shorten that muscle, that means it's a contraction. If we lengthen that muscle, that means it's a relaxation. Basically, like, so you could determine a muscle's action just by looking at the way the fibers are running. And how do we shorten that? How do we close off that muscle? How do we open up that muscle?
Right.
This is kind of the basis for a lot of active release therapy. Taking a muscle, pinning it, putting it in a shortened position, pinning the muscle, and then lengthening that muscle to allow those muscle fibers under your thumb or under the finger that you're holding it, usually the thumb, to sort of spread out as you open it.
Right.
Fan out. You know, the muscle fibers fan out. On a microscopic level, it's a lot going on.
Yeah.
You know, active release therapy.
Right. It works.
It works. So, really, you know, jiu-jitsu is sort of like a human chess in terms of like restricting people's movements in certain directions and understanding that if we block off a certain muscle group and they can't contract that muscle, or if we block off a range of motion, we're kind of handcuffing them into going in a different direction. Either they're going to stay still or they have to go in a different direction that is not this one that we're impeding. Right?
Yep. Wow.
So starting to kind of understand this is like almost hacking the human body. It's like almost like looking at a computer and like you know how to type code. Like, how many people, like, actually do jiu-jitsu and don't know about anatomy? I'd say 99% of the people. Like, yeah. I started, like, training. I was just kind of discovering little things, little tricks that I'm, like, connecting with, like, jiu-jitsu moves that I know and saying, man.
That's cool.
If we can start to restrict ranges of motion, sky's the limit.
Mm-hmm. Because you know which way the joints move and the, you know, like,
how are they limits. Supposed to move? Yeah. You look at the shoulder girdle and it has, mm-hmm. we kind of refer to external and internal rotation in mm-hmm. terms of taking our elbow about 90 degrees, parallel to like our ear, like our our elbow's kind of like up to our ear, our hand is raising in the ceiling.
Right.
And we could bring our palm back or we could roll our palm all the way forward and bend our shoulder. So it's like you see external, internal rotation of the shoulder. These are two moves in jiu-jitsu. These are moves that we get to that range of motion and then we hyperflex it. We hyperextend it. Right? When we look at an arm bar, the very common arm bar that you see in UFC.
Right.
What we're noticing is a hyperextension of the humeral ulnar joint. You know, I'm not just talking about the ligaments. I'm not just talking about stretching out the ligaments. I'm talking about a dislocation of the actual joint that is articulating right there. Wow. That's the break. That's what you're looking for. This is as opposed to like a compound fracture, which would be a clean break through a bone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that could be kind of like a non-comminuted fracture, which is only in like two pieces, just kind of a clean break, or like a comminuted fracture is like more than two pieces, like it has multiple breaks.
Right.
So any of these are devastating, of course.
Yeah.
And will end a fight immediately.
Right.
So sort of to understand how the human body works, how the knees, how the ligaments work, how the LCL, MCL, what are the range of motions that they restrict? And then in jiu-jitsu, it's a lot of how do we exploit that range of motion? Mm. How do we put it into a range of motion and create enough leverage, create enough torque, create enough sheer force to rip through that structure?
Wow.
To absolutely devastate this person and put them out for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then chiropractic. Okay, so now that's like the art of jiu-jitsu is like destruction, and then chiropractic is healing.
Wow.
It's like, how do we understand the mechanics of this joint to restore range of motion, to decrease inflammation, to, you know, at what points do we need surgery, right? Or what signs, if we examine a patient, tell us, okay, we should probably refer this out to an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, right. Like
we should sort of understand. So a lot of times when I'm rolling jiu-jitsu now as a black belt, I have this psyche where it's like I can get in a position and be very controlled and sort of do very subtle hyperextension, catch someone, or I can have that control, which again I almost never use this unless it's like a competition setting where I will say I am going to fracture your arm. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? It's not just like pull it. No, it's like I think to myself in a very scientific way, I am going to like fracture that joint.
Yeah.
Right there. Then it's like I'm isolating right exactly where I know it articulates.
Right.
So it's just the precision that anatomy and chiropractic and biomechanics has done for my jiu-jitsu is unspeakable.
Man, that's pretty cool. The yin and yang of the destruction, like you said, and then the healing. It's like you got to know how to tear it down so you could build it back up.
Yeah, man.
That's pretty cool. You got both sides covered.
Yeah, and then you look at, jiu-jitsu is very much the art of limb destruction, strangulation as well.
Mm. Really?
Well, wow. Jiu-jitsu means gentle art, technically. So, you know, I don't want it to sound like it's a very, like, violent art, but it's...
When I think jiu-jitsu, I think UFC. Is that fair, like, association?
So, yes, the first UFCs were created by basically the first family of jiu-jitsu that came out of Brazil, the Gracie family.
Yep.
There's a whole history behind them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the older brothers created this tournament with the help of a very famous the Apocalypse Now director, John Milius.
Okay.
A couple like Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah.
You ever see that movie?
Yeah.
Like very famous Hollywood actor put on a production with Horion Gracie, which is the head of the Gracie family, called the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the UFC. UFC won. It was a pay-per-view event. Winner gets $50,000.
Wow.
Their little brother, Hoist Gracie, what they did is they brought in, it was a 16-man tournament, all different styles, kickboxing, savate, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, judo, all the different martial arts out there. Yeah. The best of the best. They had a bodybuilder come in. They had, Olympic boxer, whatever.
Cool. I didn't know that.
No holds barred fighting. Everything goes. Once somebody taps out or once somebody's knocked out, it's over. Uh-huh. It's just very brutal. Crazy stuff. Uh-huh. So what they did for Hoist, who's a 170-pound representative, they brought in all these heavy training partners, like local tough guys from Southern California, local wrestling champion, local boxing, Golden Gloves boxer, boom, and just said, Hoist, clinch that guy, take him down, and choke him out. Every single time. He did that in these tournaments. Uh-huh. UFC 1, UFC 2, UFC 3, UFC 4. In UFC 2, I think he got to the semifinals and he got injured. Uh-huh. Like after one match, like he like defaulted, but he won UFC 1, 3, and 4.
Wow.
And everybody, he's defeating 200, like guys 100 pounds heavier than him.
Wow.
250, 260-pound guys. Huh. So this is the first family of jiu-jitsu that created the UFC.
Uh-huh.
So for sure. So the UFC you love now with Khabib and Conor McGregor and all these like huge characters and stuff.
Yeah.
It came from jiu-jitsu.
Right.
Then people started to understand, okay, you got to mix everything into it. It's mixed martial arts, MMA. So you have to get jiu-jitsu, boxing, karate, you know, wrestling and everything. Then you, by UFC 30, UFC 31, you know, after all these, you know, tournaments and they just made it cards. Eventually it wasn't like a 16-man tournament. Everybody just had one fight eventually. They said, okay, like people start to catch up. The guys who knew jiu-jitsu were like, other guys were starting to train jiu-jitsu because this is a bomb that went off. That when Hoist Gracie won, jiu-jitsu exploded in the United States.
And when was that?
1993.
93, wow.
Jiu-jitsu exploded. But only with like local, and then people like start to see it. It's like 95, 96, 97, the kids would go to Blockbuster, find the old UFC one on the thing, watch it.
Blockbuster. How about that?
We got to find jiu-jitsu. So it's like even it might have been delayed, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody found a tape with these old no-holds-barred fights, these UFC fights. And it's just like, whoa, who's this guy? Just running through everyone. They're still on UFC Fight Pass. They're unbelievable.
That's pretty cool.
Hoist Gracie. R-O-Y-C-E. Gracie. I did his seminar today in San Pedro.
Nice.
Bro, it's so amazing. Jiu-Jitsu is this close-knit community, and I can go and have like so many questions and just
all over.
Talk with them. I've done another one of his seminars. This is the second seminar of his I've done. It's crazy.
So that's the talk about your like the lineage of teaching through Jiu-Jitsu and like how you have different, you know, ones and all of that.
So when I started in Chicago, I started with these guys, the Redzivik family, and I asked them, what about this belt system? What's the deal with this? Like in terms of if I get a belt in here, does it transfer to like another school? Like if I move to California or move to this city, they're like, yeah, your belt follows you like your knowledge. Like everybody in jiu-jitsu, it's like understood you respect the belt from wherever it comes from.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, cool. I think I can get down with this. Like, I know I can just put in some time here that I can go there, you know. In the process of, like, my first year losing weight, I was hanging out with Idris, my instructor, a lot. Like, at the academy, you know. But between classes, like, for several hours, we'd always talk. We'd just hang out. I'd sit on the couch, chill hour or two before class, hang out an hour or two after class. And he was just sitting at the desk. You know, we just talk. And man, like these are like free therapy sessions. So I became like really loyal to him, really loyal to his brother, to his cousins, the Redziviks, and they all like three guys like ran the schools, three schools in Chicago. And I, you know, I got a blue belt from them. I got almost a purple belt from them, and then I moved to Indianapolis. And then this guy wanted to give me a purple belt in Indianapolis. I'm like, you know, I want to get my purple belt from the Redziviks. So I trained in Indianapolis while I was in dental school there. For a year training hard, he offered me a purple belt twice.
Wow.
But then when I withdrew from dental school, and that's what happened, was I withdrew from dental school, came back out of purple belt. And then I decided I'm with these guys for life, you know, it doesn't matter. I trained like all these other places, but eventually, like 2 years later, transferring to California, and I hadn't trained with them for a few months, just popping because I'm all over the place. They're like, hey, come back, get your brown belt. It's just kind of like, damn.
Right.
Like that's like family stuff. Like I'm not paying them, I'm not doing nothing. It's just like they consider me part of their like team. So I went got a brown belt. Next day I moved to California. It was one of the best days of my life getting a brown belt because we ate a fugu de chao.
I love that.
Like it was just, I was so happy.
Yeah.
Compared to the purple belt where I just withdrew from dental school, where I was at my lowest low in my life. I was broken. Like that purple belt just tore me up. I was crying so much. Saved my life, man.
Yeah.
But brown belt was dope.
Hell yeah.
Moved to California, trained here 2.5 years, went back. Well, I was, my guys in California, they understood that I had come here as a brown belt. Uh-huh. They're like, who do you have your brown belt under? Oh, the Redzeviks. Like, they knew them. Uh-huh. We'll respect sort of like that process. You know, they want to be sacred with it. Uh-huh. And that was so dope. So the lineage, like, it was kind of done properly. A lot of times, I don't have Rona.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, guys will just like jump around cities and take belts from whoever they want. But for me, it was like more meaningful to stay with the guys I started with.
Uh-huh.
And people respect that, you know, but that's not like the reason I was doing it. I just felt this intrinsic like desire that you're my brothers. Like, you know so much about me from like my worst parts of my life that like, and so many phases of my life, like you're seeing that, like, I have to like end it with you. I started with you. I'm going to end it with you.
Uh-huh.
And then get my degrees from you or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we're chatting on the phone, you know, keeping in touch here or there while I'm in California. Then Rona hit. They had already told me that I was ready for black belt and it's just a matter of time. But then Rona hit March, right? Mid-March this year.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just like biding my time. April, May, June, July. I'm still training on my own, like low-key, anonymous location.
Uh-huh.
August came. I'm like, you know what? I finished my second to last term of Cairo school. I got a couple weeks off. It's nice weather in Chicago right now. I'm gonna take a chance. I'm gonna take a chance. I don't have anything guaranteed. I'm gonna get a ticket to Chicago, crash at someone's house, and spend like 5 days there.
Uh-huh.
End up finding like a place to stay and just a hotel. I was like, screw it, I'm not gonna bother. I just want to go in and out. I don't care.
Yeah.
But I was thinking,
I feel you.
That's just whatever. Just close to the academy.
Right.
And man, there was this whole process of like my instructor talked to me. He's like, listen, you know, I think you're ready. I just want to talk to the guys in California to see if you're ready. Like, the guys I train out here with, like, pretty famous guys, you know, like, especially Eddie Bravo. Like, he's on Joe Rogan Experience a lot.
Uh-huh. And, yeah.
You know, he's a very...
I've heard him on there a lot, yeah.
Yeah, he's a very, like, a sought-after guy. Like, his time, his opinions and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Turns down a lot of interview requests, turns down a lot of TV shows.
Huh.
Dude, yeah, he's been on, like... Anyways, he wants to talk to him. So I'm like, okay, call Eddie up. Like, Eddie, listen, this is the most important thing in my life. Can you talk to my, like, jiu-jitsu instructor? I know you guys have never met. He's like, yeah, cool, for sure. So they got on the phone. This is late August.
Uh-huh.
And then they had, like, a 30-minute conversation. And I'm, like, jonesing. Like, I know they're talking right now. I'm just like, I'm going to dinner with my buddy. I'm like, just nervous. And then Idrizi called me. He's like, man, like, we had a good conversation about you, man. Congrats, man. Let's do it Monday. Like, we're going to set a time. We're going to do Facebook Live.
Yeah.
Set a time. We're going to do Facebook Live. And it was like a very, and I invited like some friends locally.
That's awesome.
Put on, it was like a special, just one, you know, 1 hour special. Like, we went there. He did a whole speech on me. I did a whole speech. It's on Facebook Live. You can post it later.
Wow. Okay.
But it's posted there if you just scroll on my.
That's cool. Okay.
And dude, it was like, I was his first black belt because his cousins had given a bunch of black belts, but he was the youngest, you know, brother of them.
Oh, that's awesome, man. So like, that was his first black belt.
I was his first black belt. So it's just like, it doesn't matter because I'm training all over the place anyways. Like, the black belt, if you deserve it, you deserve it.
Right.
But it's like, I wanted to make it. So it's like, I started with you and I want you to like feel comfortable to give it to me. And he was a good dude. And this is like September 1st of this year.
Mm-hmm.
That was a life goal for me, dude. That was like as big as a doctorate.
Yeah.
People started calling me Professor Armand.
Wow.
Everywhere I go, Professor Armand. Hey, Professor. Hey, Professor. Like, chilling.
That's cool. A pretty great feeling. Cool. Feeling.
It's,
yeah,
it's like a respect thing. You know, you feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
Like the thrill of accomplishment. Like, it's the best high because it's like you walk around saying, man, I did something. I did something and like no one could take that away from me. And like, that's just because of you put a bunch of hard work in, like, early on, and then you just reap the benefits for life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then chiropractic school came back like 3 months later, and then just yesterday graduated. Like, people call me doctor, like,
yeah, professor and doctor.
Here's the thing,
congrats.
On the mats, call me professor. Mm-hmm. In the office, call me doctor. Outside of that, just call me Armand.
There you go. I like
just
it.
Just keep it compartmentalized. I'm not don't trip because I think people trip too much. Trip too much. Call me doctor everywhere we go.
Yeah, no.
Or you're at a friend's house, doctor.
Right.
Doctor, I'm a cult doctor.
Right. It's not that serious.
Not that serious, man. Keep it in the office. from the office, you know, just say, hey, Dr. Armand, call me by my first name. Right. Dr. Armand. I think that's pretty chilling.
That's what I'm doing. Yeah. Dr. Adrian. Yeah.
Dr. Adrian. That's Dr. Armand. I always like that about chiropractors. We always refer to doctor their first name.
Yeah.
I was always like, it's kind of like casual Friday with names. You know, it's like still like a formal settings like doctor, but like, you know, Dr. Armand.
Exactly.
Not Dr. Fati. I don't like doctor. My dad is Dr. Fati. My brother's Dr. Fati. I'm not Dr. Fati. I'm Dr. Armand.
See that? Change it up, bro.
Yeah, man. Because you want to be a little more relatable.
Yep. Exactly.
And man, I looked at Dr. Pete Goldman, and for me, it was just about, shout out to him. He's in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a jiu-jitsu black belt. Oh. He's a chiropractor. At this point, I was a jiu-jitsu blue belt when I met him. And I was trying to get into dental school at that point. And I'm like, this guy's my hero. Like, he's making good money, freaking adjusting people, helping them. Like, he's a godsend.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm like, people pay a premium, but that man, he helps them out. And just like 5 minutes, in 5 minutes, you're just going to feel like a new person. And then, you know, he charged $95 an adjustment.
Wow.
Cash. And like, he doesn't take insurance. It's just in and out. And he sees like 12 people an hour. $1,200 an hour, no big deal.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Do that a couple hours a day, you're fine.
So he's the creator of Zone Technique, right?
Well, so he took Zone Technique from Dr. Thurman Fleet.
Okay.
Who was under like a BJ Palmer student. Uh-huh. So it's like a lineage kind of drawn down.
Uh-huh.
DD Palmer student. Anyways. Yeah, the
one of the Palmers.
One of the Palmers, yeah.
Yeah.
But I have all these books. And it's a very like a... It's a whole healing sort of adjustment in terms of finding the brain centers that correspond to what system in your body is short-circuiting the nerves that go to the brain.
Uh-huh.
And you can sort of detect that right away. Anyways, Dr. Pete Goldman was a jiu-jitsu black belt and a chiropractor. And I'm just thinking, this guy's a badass. Like, he runs a successful practice, and he's, you know, training with everybody in a city. Everybody respects him. Like, he can go into any of these academies, you know, hooks him with an adjustment, but he doesn't have to pay to train all these places. He, you know, you're respected. You're like revered, you know, you go everywhere. Like, your skill is respected, like as a martial artist, like, wow, this guy like knows his stuff, but then he's a doctor too. He heals. So like, that's someone like you want to be cool with.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, this guy, like, I got to do what he's doing. Like, the way he's doing it, the technique he's doing. And he showed me that the technique's pretty easy, actually. And like, I started doing that like first day of chiropractic school. Like, once I got into the practice labs and stuff, I was like, guys, check out this zone technique I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just tripping about it. And amazing results. And it made me so passionate about chiropractic. And I couldn't be more excited to just practice like this coming out of chiropractic school.
Nice.
I couldn't be more excited. And
yeah,
it, just to kind of run a very straight chiropractic method. Not too, you know, conventional medicine based, like non-pharmaceutical, I think is the best way.
Right.
Non-substance. No, it's work with the hands. Chiropractic. Practice of the hands.
Right.
Which is what translates from Greek.
Right. Yeah.
Old school chiropractic. And yeah, seeing him as a black belt and a chiropractor, I'm like, two big accomplishments. And this became like my 5-year goal, 8-year goal from like blue belt. Like, I got to keep working towards these. Because they're both worth it. It's so hard to get there, but once you get there, man, you've done something that kind of sets you for life, like in a sense of like,
yep.
I can make my schedule. I can adjust a little bit more. Or I could teach a little bit more, train a little bit more.
Now, what do you have to say about like the community aspect of jiu-jitsu? Like, talk more about that. I know that's important to you.
Yeah, so I mean, it did start with like, when I was losing weight in Chicago as a white belt, talking with Idris all the time. Then I realized, like, I joke and say that going to jiu-jitsu, I have no life. I have no social life. That's a lie, man. Mm-hmm. That's a lie, because you socialize every time you go to jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking with people. You're hanging out. I mean, there have certainly been many days that it's been like, let me just go get my workout and bounce. But right. Even still, you're interacting with the instructor, and you always respect him, and there's always like a... I'm always asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still getting that stimulation of seeing other people, even in my antisocial ways of going to jiu-jitsu, which is not that antisocial if you think about it.
But you're going to hang out with a group of people.
yeah, you're hanging out with a group. You're training. You're literally wrestling with a partner. Like, dude, you know, I mean, your communication level is up to you, but like you're still there,
mm-hmm.
you're still working.
Mm-hmm.
So despite, you know, that wasn't exactly my intention of it, but I soon discovered through jiu-jitsu, wow, this makes me keep coming back. This makes me so even on my off days, I want to come hang out. And that's really what it became. And I really discovered this once I got my purple belt from dental school, getting a purple belt the day I withdrew from dental school, and like it's crushed, but then I was just like saved. Like it was the biggest like 180 that happened in a day I think I can experience. Wow. Having the worst day you've ever had, turning into one of the like best, most memorable days instantly. And just crying. Like I was so destroyed. But it was like a good cry. Like jiu-jitsu, I'm like, I know I'm going to be doing this at least. Like jiu-jitsu's got my back. Like these guys got my back. I wasn't paying this guy for over a year, and I just came by, and he just gave me a purple belt.
Wow.
And I was so broken. Like it broke me in a very good way.
Mm-hmm.
Man, and I just think how low I was then, how low I was out of like dental school, hating where my life was going, hating what I had become. Had gained a little bit of weight again. Remember, I lost all that weight to gain a little bit more back in dental school from the stress.
Yep.
You know, getting back good. We're good, though. And, dude, it was powerful, man, to say the least, just getting that acknowledgement that, listen, just training with you once, looking at your belt, how tattered it is, I know you've been training in Indianapolis. I don't need to be calling that. I was never checking in Indianapolis. I was never like doing the attendance card and stuff. I just show up and train. Like, and they were always like, track your class. I'm like, listen, I'm paying for unlimited anyways. I'm just gonna show up and train. I don't care,
man. So in a way, jiu-jitsu like really changed your life in a lot of ways.
It's a support system. It was just like a safety net. Like you jump out of a building, they had like a net there.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And they just like, jiu-jitsu saved me, man.
That's really awesome.
And then that's what happened, like, as a purple belt. I really discovered that this is the social aspect. Then I became used to the idea of, not that I wasn't doing this really, but, like, I became used to the idea of no matter what, you show up to training, even if you're not going to train. Even if you're too sore, if you want to take the night off, you show up. Even if you got to leave early or show up late, show up.
Uh-huh.
Watch, get a couple things. Spend time with a black belt every day.
Uh-huh.
Because one day, you'll be a black belt if you hang out with that black belt every day.
Uh-huh.
If you hang out with enough doctors for a long time and you do the work and you do the work, I'm not just saying like show up and like do nothing. It's like you have to like kind of sign up for the whatever it is that you're doing.
Right.
But then you still show up on your off days and you still, you know, seek out that advice. You're going to make it one day.
Uh-huh.
And people respected black belts, man. People were like, I looked at that, like wherever I went, there was always a appreciation like amongst that community of people,
right,
that wow, like the black belts were like professor, like it was a very like respect, man. That's not to say that there's putting anyone down or putting anybody above anyone else, but it's like you could be proud of your accomplishment, you feel good about yourself, you know, you acknowledge those who have put in the time.
Now going along with that, what about we were talking before we started recording about the topic of celebrating achievements before you achieve them.
Oh, don't get me started. Okay. There's these girls I see posting this stuff. I see some guys do it too, but dude, the ones who do hashtag future doctor.
Yeah.
The ones who like post about their medical or dental journey like every other week, every day.
Yeah.
About like future doctor, future DDS, future DC.
It's out there. Yeah.
Or like, we got this one girl who transferred away from our school. And Cairo, she would have graduated in our class, but everybody despises this girl, man. Like, I'm not going to put her on blast, but dude, she just like, everything she's doing, it's like, it's like she already got there. It's like every day it's like a celebration. So it's like, and then she's like doing all these like photos, like, oh my God, look at me in my lab coat, my white coat ceremony. Oh my God. Like I'm just starting to read about this thing. And it just, it's getting to a point where it's like, don't rub your education in people's faces. You know?
Yeah.
Try to be like insightful and like kind of take things, but just like nobody cares about like your journey through chiropractic. I mean, I don't know, man.
Well,
don't celebrate the achievement. Like, don't say, I got one girl who like writes Doctor of Chiropractic and Neuromuscular Disease Disorder intern on her, like, but she just writes INT. So like, it's a technicality where it's like, People think she's like a doctor.
That's a little deceiving.
I have not said I'm a doctor at any point. I have not put on my profile Dr. Chiropractic DC until I get licensed by the state to call myself one. Guess what? I just graduated yesterday. I passed all my board exams. I got to, you know, send in a bunch of paperwork and file, pay a couple fees to
become licensed. Yeah.
Licensed. That's just a matter of paperwork. The hard work's over.
You earned the title of doctor. You did the schooling.
Doctor of chiropractic.
You can't practice legally without the license.
Yeah, I guess it's a debate you can make.
Yeah.
Like, I am a doctor of chiropractic, but...
Like, that's regardless of the license.
Yeah, I'm not licensed in the state of California.
Right.
Nationally licensed, essentially.
Nationally accredited education. Yeah.
I mean, I got past the National Board of
Chiropractic. But that also goes along with... Right. That goes along with the idea of don't attach your identity to your title.
Yeah.
And you're not who, you know, you are not your occupation. So many people
are like, home, man. Like,
right. That's hard, man. That work-life balance, right? Like, I try to strive for that, but too many people, it's like work, 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 work. Oh, work, work, work. You got to work, work, work. It's like, yeah. Nobody on their deathbed says that, oh, I wish I worked more. Nobody.
Nobody, man.
You know?
Yeah. And,
so work is important and having a career and an occupation and a passion you're into, but at the end of the day, it's not everything.
Yeah, and I mean, I see this in jiu-jitsu a lot too, where like people win a very insignificant competition,
mm-hmm.
or they're like a jiu-jitsu blue belt or something that's not like that crazy.
Right, right.
But I'm kind of guilty. Like in an effort to gain clout,
yeah,
they'll put it in their profile like some not like local regional bronze medalist in this division, and that's in their freaking Instagram profile. Like, who cares, dude?
Right. Talk who about cares? Ego, right?
Do a host of my podcast. Boom, put your podcast thing, you know?
Right.
Do like if you have an athlete page or whatever, MMA record, I think like some people are recruiting MMA fighters, so having a good profile to like showcase that you're an MMA fighter.
Yeah.
Type of thing. If you're an actual jiu-jitsu competitor and like really proud of like some serious accomplishments I've seen, like, but I just see these like guys like putting all these medals, like this guy Pan American silver medalist, this dude, five things, and it's like at least though they've accomplished that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see guys at psych say the future world champion, and I don't want to crap on your dreams, but you know, I don't know,
it's a little aggressive.
I mean, it's just funny. I'm trolling right now. I mean,
yeah.
I don't ever be the guy who tells someone they can't do something. This is one thing I decided long ago.
Right.
Don't be that person. Don't be that person to like tell someone, you know what, I don't know if you're cut out for it.
Because some people work so hard and then come back just to tell you,
just
hey, by the way.
Just spite you, dude.
Yep, I did it.
They did it, and they just want to laugh. They want to like sit where we're sitting right now and laugh at the people who doubted them.
Exactly, yeah.
Because I'm sitting here and I'm laughing at the dental school sort of situation. And like how miserable my life was and how happy my life is now.
Yeah, man.
Jiu-jitsu black belt, a doctor of chiropractic. I got people filling up my inbox asking to be patients.
See that?
And I'm like,
that's awesome.
I'm just like, hold the phone. Let me just get my state license.
That's awesome,
but
man.
Like nationally, like everything's set up.
Can you imagine if you were a dentist right now? Would you have been happy? Probably not, right?
No, because especially in jiu-jitsu, I wouldn't have been like as respected. I wouldn't have been as sought after.
Right.
Everybody in jiu-jitsu loves chiropractic.
Nobody's looking for a dentist.
People are looking for dentists. Dentists are just fine, but like...
Right. Nothing against dentists, but it's not as complimentary with jiu-jitsu,
yeah,
obviously.
Specifically.
Yeah.
For jiu-jitsu,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get a lot higher percentage of people coming to you from jiu-jitsu if you're a, you know, chiropractor.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense.
Especially if you're a black belt. Like I've met like white belt chiropractors, and then it's like, okay, but you're a student of like jiu-jitsu right now. You're not like an authority on it,
right?
Versus like a black belt in jiu-jitsu, you're an authority on that. So that's like, that's pretty dope. Well, you're a chiropractor too, so that's like,
plus, not only are you a black belt, but I feel like you're really into it. You know, you write for the Jiu-Jitsu Times, don't you? And you know, different stuff like that. So like, you're really, you know, into it. You've been on other podcasts.
I compete. I'm on jiu-jitsu podcasts. You know, I go to seminars. I teach a couple times a week.
Awesome.
You know.
So you're really into it, man. I love that. I love seeing people that follow their passions, and you can tell when you talk to them when they're just living their life, and you're living your life with passion, and that's what it's all about, you know? And that goes along with kind of like the idea of people that don't do that and fall under their, you know, pressure from their parents or their cultures or whatever to achieve in a certain career, to do this certain education. It's like, you know, we can both relate to that.
Don't you dare chase your dreams.
Right.
That's the message that Middle Eastern parents are trying to send.
Yep.
The Asian parents are trying to send their kids. Follow our dreams.
Right.
You know, my dad told me, he's like, Armand, my only dream was that all three of my kids became doctors.
Mm.
And I would like to at least think that I did my part as a good son to have fulfilled his dream for me and his help in getting there. But at the same time, to say at least I'm passionate about adjusting and the zone technique and the reasons that Dr. Pete Goldman got me into this healing using a very traditional approach of chiropractic, I love what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very excited to get into practice. Mm-hmm. And then I have jujitsu to sort of supplement that and make it so I don't have, I could teach as much or I could do as much or as little chiropractic as I want, because I'll have jujitsu to fill up the time.
Yeah.
And that's working toward, and that's perfectly fine. Like, that's totally cool. And then
it's the ultimate 1-2 punch.
Yeah. And then I can fill up my, there's no way I shouldn't be able to fill up my schedule with both, when both are at my hands. My, like, I should be able to find, like, either teaching opportunity, and especially in the works of opening a school, so I can just add classes to my school, right? Nice.
Yep.
And then adjust a couple hours a day.
Beautiful.
Just two, three hours a day, just fill it up with, you know, very straightforward patients.
Yep.
Like not a workers' comp case.
Mm-hmm.
Not a personal injury case, because those get messy. Those are litigation with lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
Those people need chiropractic, no doubt.
Right. That's not your bread and butter,
though. Well, it's just, it's the paperwork process. It's the it's the settlements. It's the fact that the payment methods take a long time.
You have to wait on the payment.
You have to wait. It's a lot of time and manpower needed to just file these claims. For a 10-minute patient appointment, I'm going to spend like another hour on like note-taking and talking to someone.
Oh, no thanks.
Just waiting on hold for someone. You might take 6 hours to stay on hold for an insurance verification.
Yeah.
And that way, like, I've seen offices hire women just to sit on the phone with insurance companies.
Jeez.
And it's just like, yeah, that's great. And
no, I'm not doing anything with insurance myself either. And you're not planning to either, right?
But it's a dangerous game.
Yeah.
A lot of people would say.
Would
say, because it's like, you have to build a clientele. You have to find a niche.
Mm-hmm.
You have to depend on cash patients. And you have to offer service that people will pay cash for.
Mm-hmm.
And that people see value in.
Yeah.
And that, you know, with chiropractic at least, but or anything, just make it so that like their life is so greatly enhanced with it that they don't want to go back to life without it.
Right. The value exceeds the price, and then that's what people buy.
And then like still the price for me, I'm going to set a nominal fee. You know, find a fee that I feel is accessible but also fair for my time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely an art to it, finding that.
Right.
You know, I got to keep the doors open. I got to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to like price myself out of the market, but then you don't want to undervalue yourself.
That's true.
And then that way, if you're really killing it, then you can bring help on board, but got to get yourself started.
Yeah. Yeah.
So jujitsu for sure is something I thought about many years ago as a good stepping stone to help the chiropractic. Like I already have a plan coming out of chiropractic school. Mm-hmm. I know what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You can open a school and you know, I been in the works for that for a little while and have a little chiro spot right on the side there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need much space for a chiro office. You need a table.
That's it. any details you can share on the school, or is that in the works?
Sure. I mean, I'm going to open a franchise school under the Gracie University, Henry Gracie, Huron Gracie, who are under their grandfather created Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Awesome.
Their father created the UFC.
Wow.
He was the one, Horion Gracie, who teamed up with the Apocalypse Now director.
Yep.
Or was it Conan? Yeah, Conan.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, yeah, that guy's son runs these academy in Torrance. I've been training a lot with them out here. They have an outstanding, you know, instructor certification program, which I got certified this year in. Very extensive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even talk about that enough.
Okay.
But
nice.
They have a whole franchise model proven how to, you know, they're going to funnel students in with you. I mean, they really above and beyond. They're fantastic in terms of their support.
That's awesome.
Support in helping you get started.
That sounds awesome.
So that's the plan. And I do have a territory in Laguna Beach, Laguna Hills reserved.
Nice.
I'm going to, you know, I'm kind of in the process of looking for real estate, but.
That's exciting, man. Wow. Great area. Yeah. That's where I got my LASIK eye surgery.
Yeah. It's a nice area. And
Laguna Hills
still has like, you know, families, and you can have a big kids program, and
yeah,
it's a little not as strict as other counties.
Yeah,
so I could probably get open, and you know, a lot of people are still gonna stay in, but you know, vaccines out, so people are, you know, not to talk about vaccines, but I think one thing that vaccines are gonna do is change public perception a little bit about coming out.
Right. It's if like, you want to get it, yeah, and that's make you feel better about going out, great. Please go
great,
ahead. Yeah.
Great.
Love that you have that option. But, great.
They have that option.
Yeah.
To each their own, and we'll keep.
But it shouldn't be a required.
Absolutely not.
Thing. That's what you know. What medical invention?
It's getting strong. Right?
Which tell me what medical intervention is mandated, and like it's just you know the whole follow the money and.
Well, here's what scares me about any vaccine is the fact that there's a law that was put in place, I think, 1986, 1987.
Yeah, 86.
Where you cannot sue.
Exactly.
I was just going to say that. You literally cannot sue a vaccine company.
Yep.
Because of any side effect that happens from that vaccine.
Right.
What a joke.
They have no liability. They're exempt from any liability. People don't.
Are you serious?
And you can take that somehow, like, seriously and, like, trust that? I don't know, man. I don't know. It's a paradigm thing. They don't want to like accept the fact that they could not be looking out for their best interest, so they don't want to believe it.
I'll tell you what, the vaccine, statistically speaking, will probably do more good than harm.
Mm-hmm.
Probably do more good than harm.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get it.
Right.
I'm going to, you know, my entire family is getting it. Mm. My brother's already gotten it. My sister, I think, is going to get it. Even though she has a baby coming on the way, she's still like would rather get it.
Mm.
They're both MDs. I'm mm-hmm. a DC. I'm not getting it, not because I'm a DC, but just because mm-hmm. I've sort of, you know, done my own research and decided that for my body, my choice. Haha. Nah.
Nah, yeah.
I don't want to get too controversial here, but.
Yeah.
Like, I look at it like, I would rather get COVID.
Exactly.
I would rather get COVID and get over it.
Yes.
I think I had it like a year ago and didn't.
Well, dude, I mean, how about all the people that are asymptomatic? Like, what does that show? They're healthy. They have a healthy functioning immune system.
Let me bet on the 99.9%.
Yeah.
Survival.
Like, I think survival of 99.98%. I think it's pretty.
Rather than the unknown of taking a vaccine that was rushed through FDA approval, that was rushed for emergency use.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a foreign object just being put in you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too anti-vax. I know there's like
mm-hmm.
people listening to this that are vax,
mm-hmm.
but more power to you. You know, honestly, like it's about freedom of choice, and that's why I'm so proud to be an American.
Yep,
I'm more proud to be an American than anything throughout this year because
mm-hmm.
even though New Zealand is, you know, COVID-free as they say,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people would say that's, you know, they have good leadership that shut everything down and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, but the very fabric of our country, United States, is based on freedom.
Right.
You can't let one little pandemic come and then just upend everything that this country stands for without there being a lot of blowback and litigation and this and that. And by the time the litigation's over, it's like years
mm-hmm.
dragged through courts and then COVID's over.
Yep. Yep. I know, man. Yeah. It's a lot of freedoms are being questioned and it's pretty scary, but you know, I think ultimately a lot of good is going to come from it. I think it's making a lot of people more aware about their health and more interested in natural health and like, hey, why isn't the government or the CDC talking about anything we can do to boost their immune system like at all?
You don't hear any of this, man.
Yeah.
You don't hear any of, you know, vitamins. Just talk about basic vitamins, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to go to chiropractic school to like really learn head to toe what these vitamins do.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these packets that, you know, remember Dr. McCrae?
Oh, yeah.
Great packets. I still have some.
Uh-huh.
Gray pack is jam-packed with information. And then he said that for vitamin D, they literally don't have the paper to print, like, the amount of, like, research that's being done on it these days.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, if you go search for it, there's so much research coming out every day that you can't keep up with it.
Vitamin D is one of the best ones to bring up right now because they've done studies on COVID with
CNN,
it.
CNN, I've heard nothing.
Yep. No, Fox, they're not going to talk about it. No.
MSNBC, I've heard nothing in terms of how to shut it down. No, just social distance masks.
Yeah, man. And why is that? It's like, well,
zinc,
vitamin D. Vitamin D, they did studies on. Exactly.
I had a UFC fighter
uh-huh.
that I was training with. She told me the other day that she got COVID a few weeks ago. She's in the gym, ironically. I'm like, oh, she's fine. She got COVID a few weeks ago. For 9 days, she was just a mess. She's uh-huh. Mexican. She went down to Mexico. She got her hands on some hydroxychloroquine.
Uh-huh.
I'm, I'm, I, people who are like offended by the word hydroxychloroquine, relax. I'm just sharing a story that someone told
yeah.
me. Relax.
Right.
She got some hydroxychloroquine. She took it. She's like, overnight, it was a miracle. I was cured of COVID. Gave it to my mother. Overnight, she was cured.
Wow.
And like she bought a bunch and she took it to the United States. And she's like, I'm here for like anybody because it's going to, you know, if any of my friends in my network reach out to me for HCQ,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to hook them up because like this thing is insane.
Yeah. So I've heard that before from other people too. It's not just her. Yeah.
No, I'm not, you know, trying to take any drug if I can help it.
Right.
I mean,
how about IV vitamin C? They've done that in studies
IV
in China.
You know what? I live across the street from one of these IV clinics. I've never used it.
Oh, you should, man.
But I went to Vegas once after a jiu-jitsu tournament. Like I used one of these glutathione bags, and they put they put detox stuff. It was just like after I like cut a lot of weight, and I want to like get my foods back and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, B12.
Yep.
So nice. Yeah, got me back a little bit. Got me back.
Did that feel good?
Yeah, it definitely felt like hydrated.
Nice.
And just like came out of there, blood pressure lowered a lot after that because you fill your body with fluids.
Right. Yep.
So that
or you could drink more water, right?
Drink more water, or just. Do the
highly code, recommended.
Or just do the cheat code of a freaking IV bag.
That is the cheat code.
That's the cheat code, bro. You go, you make a like 30-minute-hour process down to like couple like minute. Like I mean, mm-hmm. drinking a lot of water like it takes time to diffuse through your body.
Right.
IV straight to the
bloodstream. It's like right in there.
Bam. Bam. Straight. Zero freaking metabolism. Just straight to the blood.
Yeah, man.
It's not like you eat food and then the food has to be broken down and is absorbed through your intestines and slowly diffuses.
Exactly. Exactly. Like nutrients. And then the people that have issues with absorption and digestive function, leaky gut, all these different issues you can have, they could eat this, you know, healthy food, but their body's not getting those nutrients in. But with an IV, it's like you bypass all that.
That's why hospitals are so big on IVs because you just bypass all the systems.
Yeah.
But then like yeah, I mean, with like intestinal disorders that like malabsorption disorders,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Ulcerative colitis.
IV will work. I mean, you don't want to be walking around an IV your whole life, but
no,
if you had to
get a nutrient boost. So one of your biggest blessings throughout all the quarantine time is your dogs. Talk about them a little bit.
Right. So
got to meet
here's
them
the
tonight.
Story. Yeah, we shut down in March. June occurred.
Uh-huh.
George Floyd.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
Yep.
Very big topic.
Yeah.
A lot going on. A lot of riots.
Yeah.
This is what happened. There's a lot of riots going on early June-ish.
Yep.
Downtown LA, we're smack in the middle of the high-rises, man. I saw riots, people running around like crazy. I saw gangs of cop cars, like 20 cop cars deep, like speeding around the block.
Wow.
Around the block, man, right outside the window. And then the curfew hit. Like they started to do curfews, 6 p.m. curfew. Started like 10 p.m. curfew, 8 p.m., then went to 6 p.m. curfew. I'm like, damn, 6 p.m. curfew.
Shit.
This is June, bro.
Whoa.
So I go outside one night. It's like 10 p.m., 11 p.m. on a Saturday. I'm all alone at home. You know, nothing going on because quarantine. Can't go anywhere. I'm like, I'm just curious, you know. I'm going to take like a hoodie, like put some gloves on, and just like go outside. And here's what happened. I walk down the street. You know, I'm like, ah, this ain't nothing. No. Turn a corner. There's a Verizon store broken into.
Oh, shit.
Right, so I take a peek inside, like kids run out, and like I kind of like I'm looking, I'm not looting, I'm just kind of like documenting this stuff, and I don't, you know, I'm kind of like staying on the periphery, mm-hmm. the outside. I'm just like, wow, I like put my phone there, like kind of filming, and then I hear gunshots like right around the corner, like boom, boom, boom.
Whoa.
I'm like shh, hid behind like cash register, like I didn't see anything, I just like went and hid behind there. Boom,
damn.
Boom, boom. And then one dude's like, yo, everything's cool. Yo, the door's open this way. The window had been blown open like earlier. So, I mean, like, I was actually, that's how what I was looking into and just pointing my camera in there. But, like, just hearing gunshots, like, outside, I'm like, I'm in this, you know, going to the store, hide. Like, I'm just like, I gotta hide.
Damn, dude.
And it wasn't aimed towards me. It was just, I think, it might have been, like, to distract someone.
Mm-hmm.
And freaking out. I'm thinking I'm going to die. I'm like, I'm hiding behind. Like, what do I do? Like, my eyes, like, what do I do? Like, I might die here.
Damn.
So then it's like a couple kids came in, like MS-13 dudes that you can see on their necks and stuff. Like, these, like, crazy, man, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids. Just the most, like, misled kids you could ever imagine. Like, they didn't, they don't know the power of just holding a gun and shooting something. Like they're just like so empty in the eyes, cold eyes. Like I don't know what their upbringing was like, but they kind of look at me and I'm walking out of there with my hands up a little bit like, hey, we cool. And they just kind of like looked at me like curious, like they didn't know I was there.
Yeah.
And they just like shrugged and they like kept walking by.
Wow.
And like one other kid walks in and like, I'm just like, hey, we're cool. I'm cool. Everything's good. And he's like, he kind of laughs in a way like, as if in a way to say like pussy, you know, like in a way that like, you're, you know, what a wimp.
Right.
Like, and as if like in a gang, you need to show that, yeah, hey, I'm like a tough guy. You know, that's how you climb the ladder. It's like my behavior right there showed that wimpy behavior. I would never make it in that world. That's like the sound that came out of his mouth.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't care. I don't give a fuck. Like I turned a corner and I bolted.
Wow.
Bolted, man. Like four blocks home. Bro, this is downtown LA. This is a Verizon store. I was just there with my phone documenting like a freaking baboon, like a fool. Why am I there? Like, dude, I was just curious. I wasn't trying to take nothing. I remember the ambivalent feelings of seeing this store. Again, I'm saving my life. I'm not robbing nothing, dude.
Right.
Dude, nothing.
Damn. I'm
trying to save myself. I see the ambivalent feelings of like seeing like iPhone covers on the floor, chargers, you know, general electronic stuff, basic stuff, phone cards or whatever. I'm thinking like, man, I'm so blessed because if I needed to get any of this stuff, I could just buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, I don't need a phone cover. I don't need to steal a phone cover. I don't need to take a freaking, what am I going to do? Look down and see if it's like my size? Like, literally, think of how dirty you'd feel. Like looting a store, like looking down. Let me pilfer through this.
Let me get this phone cover real
so
quick.
So anyways, the point is I came home, lay down on the couch thinking like I almost died. I need to have a reason to stay home. I got to get a dog.
Yeah. Nice.
Like, because if I had a dog or a cat, I was thinking about a cat or a dog. Like if I got a cat or a dog, like I wouldn't be leaving on a Saturday night to chill or to just like discover that.
Mm-hmm.
It was an epiphany. It was a wake up call.
Yeah.
So like within a week, I went on Craigslist. Looked up a Chihuahua, local Chihuahua. Let me find some Chihuahua. There's a bunch of Chihuahuas in the areas, man. I guess Chihuahuas aren't that uncommon, especially in LA, bro.
People love their Chihuahuas.
This is Chihuahua City.
Hell yeah.
Maybe in other parts of the world it's hard to find Chihuahua, but LA, bro, Chihuahuas are common.
Chihuahua capital,
bro.
I think Chihuahua, Mexico is not that far, if I'm not mistaken.
Bro, I heard they walk the streets there. I heard they're just strays. I heard there, like Chihuahua, Mexico is just like, it's like a squirrel, like a Chihuahua runs by. It's like a standard ass, you know, every day.
You're making that up, right?
Yeah, I'm making that up. But I'm talking about, wouldn't it make sense? Like, why did you name it Chihuahua then? What came first, the city or the dog?
Probably the city.
That's like goose or the egg, bro. You know what I'm saying? We're naming it Chihuahua because I heard Chihuahuas actually were used in the old Aztec times to warm beds.
Right? Are you being serious?
For royalty. What they would do, they like get like 100 Chihuahuas. I swear, I'm not making this up. Like they get like 100 Chihuahuas and like the king's bed or whatever, they like put a bunch of Chihuahuas, line them up in like a line, put them in like a blanket, and they would just warm the bed up. Then they take it out. These dogs are super warm, I have, man. I'm talking about they come under the blanket with me and like they're so, you know, like cuddly and warm and stuff. And I'm thinking,
that's
all right,
funny.
It's royalty, bro. I'm thinking myself royalty wanted to do it. Anyways,
like Aztec royalty.
Found the dogs in Inglewood. One dog.
Mm-hmm.
It was a girl. Chihuahua mix. Chihuahua, like little pug, little terrier, mm-hmm. but adorable, man. So mm-hmm. adorable.
Yeah, they're really cute, yeah.
I named her in honor of what's going on right now in the world. I named her Rona.
Nice. Love
cutest
it.
Cutest dog ever, man.
Love that.
Look at her. Rona. Princess Rona. I didn't know this, dude. I looked this up, and Rona is actually the term for, like, it's a Norwegian name.
Hmm.
Norwegian, like, princess name.
Wow.
Rona. Well, doesn't it sound like a Nordic Viking name? Rona. Oh, Princess Rona.
Yeah, totally.
Rona.
And then came her brother.
Right, so, like, a week or two having Rona, like, loved her, and everything's great. I'd leave home every day. She'd be so lonely. Like, I'd hear her whimpering as I left. She like I'd sit at home on the computer or whatever. She'd just like be on the couch, like laying there for hours, lonely. Like she's not running around. She's not playing with no toys.
Mm-hmm.
But she's very loving. When I pick her up, she licks me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, the guy, like he hit me up. The guy who gave me the dog. He's like, hey, yo, her brother just became available because, like, a family of an autistic kid who's, like, 2 years old was just, like, having problems with the dog. So they returned the dog, like, pretty quick. What do you say, man? Same price or whatever?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't rescue. I didn't go to, like, I didn't go to Wuhan, China and go to the meat market of dogs and save a dog from a cage. Yeah. You know? And, like, save the dog from the meat market. That would be, like, the most radical story of how you could say it. And I met a dude who, like, did that, like, just local neighborhood. Like, I was walking my dog one day, you know, ran into this guy, we talked, and I'm like, dog, that is like the most noble shit you could do. I'm gonna go to China, find a dog that they're gonna kill for meat, not even just put down, but we're gonna eat this dog. You want to buy it? Like, let me get that dog, let me rescue that dog. I didn't do that shit. I went on Craigslist. I went on Craigslist typing Chihuahua.
That's it.
Know what I'm saying?
Boom.
Like an American.
Like, and then you got, and then you
cash,
got, bro.
You need some cash. That's what we're new. American dollar. I'm gonna go find a dog. I'm gonna go pay someone. Got its shots good. Throwing a few toys. Throwing like whatever the blankets it likes. Give me some directions.
That's it.
I don't know, man. And just, you know, I'll name it. I'll name the dog, and I named her Rona. And then her brother became available. I thought about it for like a few days, and I'm like, you know what? It's probably like a lot less trouble taking care of two dogs than it is just like that initial jump to one dog.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Right. Like adding a dog is like, I don't think it's going to be like that much crazier. If I already have one dog, I might as well just get
Is that two. True? Has that been true?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, like the food, it's like maybe a little bit. I mean, what? You're feeding two dogs and one dog, but I mean, shits are still shits. Pisses are still pisses. They all go on the pads. I take them out.
Yeah.
Occasionally, there's an accident where I don't like it. I have to wash a sheet or something.
Yeah. That's puppy life.
Have a Persian rug sitting on the balcony now because they were destroying that thing with the shit and the piss. Oh, my God. And I was just cleaning the crap out of it and getting a professional cleaner. And I got it cleaned the hell up, and then I rolled it up. And it's still like you could still see some stuff. I'm like, man, I got to get it cleaned a few more times. Persian rug, bro.
Persian life.
So I named the second dog Wuhan.
Wuhan, China.
It's not like I went to Wuhan and got a dog.
No.
But I named my dog Wuhan. It's Inception, bro. Turning it around. I'm saying, like, I am the noble one. I'm rescuing a dog from a life that it might have not wanted. It was with an autistic kid, bro. But I'm not going to get into that. That's too much. Maybe he got vaccinated. Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that's where we got canceled.
There is no link that vaccines cause autism.
No link. There's no link. I deny.
There's lots of parents that say otherwise. So that's all I'm going to leave it at.
I mean, I've heard anecdotal evidence, but I haven't seen the evidence on paper.
Yeah. Wow.
So you know what?
That's a deep rabbit hole.
That was just a layup. I had to link the joke there. The listeners need to understand that. The joke is that some people in society link vaccines to autism, and that I could throw in a little controversy. Yeah, you get it. Mm-hmm. Deal with it, guys. Deal with it. Grow up.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, got Rona in Wuhan. That definitely helped me in terms of the loneliness. Bringing Wuhan home, like the two were like, they became like super cool right away. I mean, like initially, like the first few seconds, they kind of like sniffed each other, like, oh, you again? Mm-hmm. They just turned their head and like didn't really walk towards each other. But then you saw, like, Rona was, like, so, like, every time she'd see me, she'd, like, bask in the love that she already had, like, first dibs on. You know what I mean? Like, she just got happier immediately. Wuhan took a little while to come around. Like, he was shaking still. After a couple weeks, so now he's always, like, all jumps on me. But still, Rona, like, really curls up on my neck and stuff.
She's
like
your first love.
She's my first love. I mean, she just, like, makes her way onto my neck. Like, Rona, like, Wuhan will kind of, like, move out of the way. They have their own language, dude. It's scary.
That's funny. That's
some crazy shit. Like, I'm talking about like Wuhan will get a few seconds in with me and then do it. And then like Rona will just kind of come in and like dip her nose inside. And like Wuhan will like step aside. And like Rona's like, okay. Then she curls in. I'm like, damn, that's cold shit, Rona.
Oh, that's amazing.
Cold shit.
That's amazing.
Rona. Hey, baby.
So what else, man? Anything else before we wrap up you want to say to the world?
Guys, don't you dare follow your dreams. That's the message of today. No, that's kind of the opposite. I think that's the theme of sort of like a lot of what people think about in their late high. Okay, I'm talking all the people who are either in like late high school, college, early mid 20s, late 20s, you know, maybe early 30s. You know, you're looking at that uncertainty in life. I don't know if I've reached what I want to do. I don't know if this is going to take me to retirement. I don't know if I have something that we say I'm not going to work a day in my life. Like, I look at jiu-jitsu and chiropractic, these two things, I can combine them and say I'm not going to work a day in my life. Because I'm just going to be doing these two things.
The things that you love.
Things that I love. I'm going to do chiropractic the way I want to do chiropractic, and I'm going to teach jiu-jitsu. Teach, train, do a lot of, you know, be very involved in that jiu-jitsu. There's a lot of things you could do. A
lot of things.
Build a website, you know, a lot going on.
Awesome.
Open a school.
It's awesome, man. I'm excited for you. I think you're going to do big things, and, you know, we're going
to
get...
But this took time. This took many years to sort of build this life where I can start to customize how I want to do it. And I think people need to think about, if you take anything away, it's like, I was unhappy with the situation. I made a change. It was hard. I struggled. Mm-hmm. I hit low lows. But ultimately, I saw a vision. I saw a way. I looked at Dr. Goldman. I looked at, you know, being a chiro and a black belt. I'm like, you know, those are two radical goals. And if I combine them, I can really build a cool life. I can become cool with these school owners. I can, you know, help them out. They'll let me train there. You know, I can teach. I could adjust. I mean, that's the life I want. Yeah. Where I'm up in these gyms all the time.
Yeah.
Where every single jiu-jitsu expense would be a tax deduction.
Wow.
You know? Where travel, where I'm going to compete or like even compete for like one day and then stay somewhere for 4 or 5 days, it's a business expense because I'm traveling to compete.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? If I was a dentist, I couldn't do any of that.
Yeah, man. No, you did it right. I think you did the right path, and I think it shows, and you had the courage to... You know, follow what you're passionate in, and it wasn't easy, but it, you know, it was a long road, and it's all coming to fruition now, man. 2021 is going to be big for you.
Find your passion and figure out a way how you can monetize it. Figure out a way how you can make it a sustainable way to spend your day long term. Like, what do you like to do? If you don't like something, try out things.
Try out different things, exactly. Yep.
Go hang out with some buddies to, you know, get into what they're getting into, or, you know, find some sense of community in what you're doing. That's why it's always nice to have a friend go in with you, because, like, you already have a friend.
Right.
You know, I know one chiropractor where she made a lot of business off entering, like, Chicago social leagues. Like these, like, you know, club volleyball, club softball.
Oh, yeah. Leagues. I've done that.
There's a bunch of these, like, little club things that you join these. You just... Every single game, these guys go to the bar afterwards. Come on. Like, every single game, they're all hanging out. Oh, yeah, what do you do? Oh, my chiropractor. Okay. Oh, my God. My neck hurts so much. I'll be your patient. Okay. You know? And that's, like, how, like, things work in the real world.
That's
like,
right.
You have to go and you have to network and meet people and put yourself out there and not sit on the freaking couch and wait for something to come to you.
Right.
That's not what America is.
Right.
That's why people are, like, waiting home, sitting home, collecting unemployment, waiting to cash a check. Yeah. It's like, no, you're not going out there. You're not... hustling, you're not trying to figure out a way. You know, dude, I was like, something I didn't even mention, I was doing like small time ticket brokering, like in Chicago. Not even ticket broker, just ticket scalping. Like, I was getting a bunch of Lollapalooza tickets, at bowl season tickets, at you know, buying event tickets, racking up all the concerts that were coming in town that I knew would sell out. Buy face value tickets, scalp them. StubHub or one of these brokerage websites, just go to ticket broker, sell it for cash, and just always keep a pulse on, like, what are the big events.
Yeah.
What's going to sell out? Let me get like 4 tickets. I'll use 2 to go to, and then I'll sell the other 2.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
You know, or just sell all 4, whatever. Or like Dave Chappelle, I bought 8 tickets. Those sold out like triple face value.
Wow.
Boom.
Boom. But cash money. Things.
Hustle, you know. Look, you know, study the stock market. Go invest a little bit. I've been messing with Bitcoin a bit, you know. Made some money from March. I bought a lot in March.
Dude, you see what it's up to now?
Yeah.
As of, like, today, it's at like 23,000, 24,000.
In terms of like what I had. I only had like a couple grand in it, but
yeah.
To say that's like about triple what it is.
That's huge, man. For doing what? For nothing.
Yeah, sitting around, bro.
Yeah.
That's like unemployment right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and that wasn't even primary source, you know, income or anything.
Mm-hmm. Nice, man. Well, so
follow your passions and just figure out a way to spend your days doing that, sustain yourself and grow from it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, physically, financially, spiritually.
Yep. Beautiful.
I don't know.
Awesome, man. You it's been a good time chilling with you and chatting a bit.
We got anything else on the agenda?
What do we got?
little send-offs. I want to do a shout-out to my buddies. Well, I have a buddy, Fidansky, Faraz, Kasuki. Mm-hmm. I think he's coming to see you next week.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a couple of years, man. We occasionally shoot a text here or there, but, like, he just graduated chiropractic school a few months ago, doing big things up there in
Michigan.
I don't know. It was, like, Detroit or something. It was like
something little, around there,
like,
yeah.
I actually, like, looked at his location. It was, like, little out on the suburb, one of the 30-minute, 40-minute out of Detroit. And, you know, he was my main boy at National, man. He was one of our best friends. He was like a guy I was studying with so much there. He was going through the, kind of the same things, Middle Eastern guy. Just trying to make ends meet from a Middle Eastern perspective in terms of just like, let me get through school. What happened, man? Like, he got through. He got through. Proud of him. Anybody who sets a goal and follows through and you go through the peaks and valleys in life, but you just stay the course, you're going to go places, man. You're going to accomplish things and you're going to be proud of yourself for life because you stuck it through.
Exactly.
You can call yourself doctor. You can call yourself professor and you earn that title.
Yep.
Be proud of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, man. Well said. Appreciate you, man. And we'll definitely have many more of these.
Hell yeah, man. We'll catch up. We'll do big things and have more to talk about.
For sure, bro. All right. We'll talk soon. Peace.
Signing off.